Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to Reaccess Hollywood, which is a BoJack Horseman rewatch show. I am a Rob Wilson type.
I'm a Samuel Cook type.
And we're in the second half of season one of BoJack Horseman. And you know what, Sam? We finally arrived at the point where BoJack Horseman is a good show. We finally reached that point. I thought it was earlier than this, but I've picked the precise moment where it becomes... where it goes from being a decent show to being a great show. A decent show to being a good show.
Yeah.
A decent show to being a good show.
A great show comes next season.
I would say it goes from being a good show to a great show with Hank After Dark.
Yeah.
But it might happen earlier, it might happen later. Who knows? But, yeah, no. So, Say Anything, which is season one, episode seven, is the best episode so far.
Yeah, Say Anything, I'd say that. I mean, I do have a soft spot for odd bits of odd episodes, but I do think, yeah, I'm not sure about like my about how I've rated previous episodes, but I do think that Say Anything is, well, it is the best episode, and then I think the episode after that, The Telescope's even better. So
yes,
we're finally on the upturn that we discussed weeks ago.
Finally, we're finally. And you know why? It's because even the comedy is consistently great in this, and it doesn't, like, it's not flippant, it doesn't lower the tone, it comes at every subject that it should come at in the way that it should. You get some great new characters come into the show, you get Charlie Witherspoon, for example. Oh, my hands are still so sticky. Oh, and best voice in the show, I think. But it's just because Princess Carolyn ties this episode together so well, because she's constantly moving between the A and B plots, and even the B plot with Todd, I find kind of hysterical.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because you get some really early BoJack tongue twisters, for example, with the Guten Bourbon. The it's a urban German bourbon, and keep my urban German bourbon blurbin. And, you know, and the fact that Princess Carolyn's running between them all, and she's not just a Hollywood agent anymore, she's an actual person.
Yep.
Which they were kind of building in our A story is a D story, where she was essentially BoJack's confidant for a bit of the episode. But here, she really, 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 really... I mean, she said, well, she lets herself fall for a horse in this episode, but it's more than that. It's, she becomes his friend, and she just has to put up with cardboard BoJack and all of the nonsense that BoJack puts her through, and yet right in the middle of it all, she's striving really hard. She has to put up with, I'm right in saying that Vanessa Gecko gets introduced to this episode, right?
Yeah.
And you just have to put up with so much, and she has to put up with so much, and then right at the end of the episode, there's that moment where it goes from being a decent show to a good show, and it's that really kind of contemplative moment as everybody goes home and everybody switches the lights off and everybody winds down for the day, and then we get this reminder, we get this shot that Princess Carolyn is staying in work beyond hours on her 40th birthday, and it's the first really, really emotional moment in BoJack, I think. And it elevates it, and it takes it up a level. And I'm so, so relieved that we finally got there.
I mean, it's just nice to see. I didn't realise that it happened this quickly, that she became such a well-rounded character, because she was, you know, she was just an agent before, but now she's become someone to sympathise with and someone to, you know, like, cheer for and get behind and stuff. I mean, I applaud BoJack for his attempts to try and woo her. I do think it's genuine as well. I mean, I know people, if they don't like BoJack, will think, oh, he's just moving on too fast because of the whole Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, who is noticeably absent from both of these episodes, but, it, you know.
I think it's, well, he's less noticeably absent than he was in from episode 5. Where, yeah, he just kind of turns up on the phone at the end. He's not... as prominent in these episodes, and yet you don't miss him
as
much.
Which I think goes a long way to say how good the show is getting, or how good the show has gotten now. Because if this was a few episodes before, with how kind of limp it was, and we were kind of begging for Mr. Peanut Butter, but now he's been gone for two episodes, and they're the two best episodes of the series so far.
Yeah, no, it's true, and that's nothing to do with Mr. Peanut Butter. It's just it's more to do with the strength of what's actually there, rather than the lack of strength of what's not there. But to be honest, there were so many things that I finally got in this episode that I thought came way earlier. Like, BoJack and Princess Carolyn finally have a meaningful interaction.
Yeah.
And they finally get to talk about their relationship, and they finally get to analyse one another, and we finally get to sit there and just listen. It's the first time, I think, so far that the show is just happy to just sit.
Yeah.
And just kind of let two characters talk to each other, because we've now reached the point in the show where we want to know more about these characters. We don't want to go off and go to Boston, and we don't want to, you know, it's, I mean, okay, I enjoyed Todd's musical, but, you know, we're now at the point where enough information has been given to us that we want the show to start letting us interpret it. We want the show to sit down, and we want, to keep the irreverence up, but we don't want the show to be constantly episodic. You know, it's built, I think, very kind of, very subtly, even in some weaker episodes, it's built some very interesting characters here, and it's finally committing to just allowing us to get to know them. And it makes for a very, very strong episode. Like I say, it's not, like, 100% perfect. Like, the humour is good, and it's nice that it has that kind of anchor at the end of the episode that really grounds it, and you think, oh, all this fun I've been having, and actually, you know, Princess Carolyn is really up against it as a person. But it's still not quite on the level that it achieves in later episodes, but this is a real high point, I think, for the first season. I am a little surprised that it came later than I expected it to. I thought our A story is a D story was actually the point where the show stepped up a level, but it's actually this one. And it's taken us a while, but now I think, you know, in the future, when I'm recommending BoJack Horseman to people, I'll go, you know, it's up and down for the first five or six episodes, but then that seventh episode, that's the one, that's the moment. You know, like, I mean, it's not really the same, and it's maybe not the best comparison, but, you know, like, everybody says, like, you know, Breaking Bad, I mean, I loved the first season of Breaking Bad so much, but, like, if I was recommending it to somebody years ago, I would go, oh, you know, five or six episodes are a bit kind of, you know, they're setting the scene, that kind of thing. And then there's this moment in the sixth episode where, like, he shaves his head and he blows a room up, and, like, you know, it's, that's where the show kind of kicks off, and this is a similar kind of point of ignition for me.
I've said it about both these seasons, actually, if I'm trying to talk people into watching it. I mean, and everybody who enjoys the show has already seen it, but if you try to get new people to watch it, you've got to get them, everybody I've tried to get in has been like, "What? Why are half of them people and half of them animals?" And I've tried to watch it for 5 minutes, and I said, "Oh, what did you watch?" I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. "Oh, I just watched some clips on YouTube." No. No, you can't do that. But I think it's like, I did used to say, if you can get through the first season, like I did with Breaking Bad, you know, and then the only way is up. But now it's like halfway through. Yeah, so it is this episode, isn't it? Episode 7. If you can get to that. But I mean, I wouldn't say start with this, but I think that this episode and the next one are the two, if you wanted to introduce a person and they only had half an hour, I'd probably show them this over the telescope, because there's not as much.
I think with the telescope, you need more context.
Yeah, there's not as much baggage.
Because these kind of, I don't know, these two episodes, I think they work so well because of the context that we've slowly been provided. I don't think the moment that Princess Carolyn turns 40 would hit quite so hard if we hadn't known that her and BoJack were, you know, were together at some point in the past. I don't think we'd quite understand how much pressure she's under from BoJack if we didn't already know how much of an arsehole he is and how difficult he can be to handle.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the legwork with Princess Carolyn's character is kind of done in this episode with Vanessa Gecko, because there's that line at the beginning where Vanessa Gecko first comes into the show where she's like bragging about, oh, you know, I just dropped my three kids off at their elite school and I went home and had wonderful sex with my husband of 15 years. And you know, and she's, and then she turns to Princess Carolyn and she says, and you don't have children, right? And, you know,
it's crushing. I think it's Princess Carolyn. She says something like, I don't have any. And then, like, Gecko says, oh, you will someday. And it's like, still now, season five. And it's like, ugh, it's horrible. You know, I mean, it gets worse. It gets more depressing. But hearing that now, and it just, it kind of jolted me a bit. Whereas, like, my, it's not just a throwaway, is it? So,
my friend who got me into BoJack, he actually, his favourite character is Princess Carolyn. And he says that his favourite character is Princess Carolyn because he knows so many people like her who take on so much and give so much but get nothing in return. And I think this is the first episode where Princess Carolyn genuinely struggles to kind of, you know, I mean, she, you know, she's like, I keep ticking, I keep licking, I keep doing this, I keep doing that, like, you know, I keep rolling with the punches, I'm a cat, I always land on my feet. And eventually in season five, it's kind of, she's kind of at the point where I wouldn't be surprised if she just kind of gave up.
Yeah, there's points and, where, yeah, it does seem like it's going to happen.
This is the first point on the map for that, where this is the first time where something happens to Princess Carolyn and you think, you know what, I would just give up, to be honest. You know, and it's even though it's just the first point on the map, she has to go through so much more from this point, and it's just so. I mean, I don't know how I feel about BoJack in this episode himself. Like, I get what he's trying to do. I think it's kind of both. I think it's both him kind of rebounding off the fact that Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter are engaged, and I think it's, there's a bit of genuine affection in there. Yeah. And then once he realises that maybe it's not the best idea, he backs out. And I think he makes the right decision when they're outside the restaurant and he makes the decision to not go forward with it. I think it is the right decision. It's just that the consequence of that is what we see with Princess Carolyn. I don't think Princess Carolyn realises that BoJack actually had a solid moment of reflection when he decided, no, this is silly, I'm doing this for all the wrong reasons and I need to back out. It's one of the few times that BoJack actually shows a bit of restraint.
Yeah, I mean, and all episode he's been almost charming, but all that we've seen before is that he's just, well, he's a dick, isn't he? He's
yeah, he's very, very impulsive and mind, it impacts on people. Yeah.
But
no, yeah, I think this episode is absolutely great. I really, like, I thought I would have more to say, but I think it's very nice to sum up. I think it's very comfortable to sum up. It's the first episode where Princess Carolyn finally becomes the character that we know that she is in later seasons, where she's the kind of person who says things like, oh, BoJack, you take up 80% of my time but make no percent of my money.
Yeah.
And things like where she tells BoJack all that great stuff and he's like, do you really believe that? And she says, I'm an agent, I believe everything I say. And there's these little bits of dialogue that reveal, oh my god, so much about her character. And I'm a huge, huge fan of this episode for that reason. So yeah, mad props to this episode.
It surprised me how good it was, because I mean, I know I said last time that I do remember it being good, I don't remember it being this good.
No.
I mean, even little things like Turtle Tubbs, every time he says, oh, well, this reminds me of what I said to a young whoever, and it's just like, as a bit of a well, I'm an old student of film, and the names that he drops. Well, obviously like Keaton and Edward S. Porter, and it's just it tickled me that that's one of the bits that I don't see anybody mention, but.
There's a great visual gag whenever he's around, by the way. Whenever he's walking on the phone, he's walking like he's in a dream, and he's walking very slowly. Because he's a turtle! And it's just, it's a nice thing to stick to, and I like the fact that every time somebody walks past Cardboard BoJack, they keep up that attention to detail within the running gag, where BoJack will say, what is it, the show? What's the show that he keeps...
It's the film Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise. Yep.
That's it,
Show Me the Money and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, it was just all sorts of things like that. Like, I think it improves on an emotional level. I think it improves on a comedy level. It takes the show to a different level. And I'm so, even if we, I mean, obviously we're going to do episodes from now on, but if we never do any other episodes, I'm glad I found the point where BoJack starts being a good show and stops being a mediocre to decent one.
Yeah.
And yeah, that really is all I have to say. I am ready to grade this episode.
Go for it.
8.5.
8.5.
8.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go. What am I going for? I had it marked, but then. 8. I'm just going to go like a decent 8. Call it an 8.25.
Yeah, I'm decent to solid 8 here. So, yeah, I'm happy with that. I am happy with this episode, and I'm happy that we reached it.
It's just nice and concise.
Yeah.
But I could do without
Yeah.
Charlie Witherspoon, I think.
Oh, I love
I think
him.
that's just because I hate him. Like if I lived in the universe, I would hate being
Oh,
around
yeah,
him.
it'd be awful to be around.
So he does it well, I suppose. I mean, he's meant to be irritating, and he does that well. So maybe I'm projecting. How cynical.
So the next one is season 1, episode 8, The Telescope, which is also really great. And oh my god, it's just like this show has just given us this world, and now we're finally getting a chance to like analyze it and look into its history and its deep mythology, and it deals with some really intense subject matter. Like, and the way that the network behaves with both Herb and BoJack, and what happens to their relationship because of what BoJack decides to do, and the fact that none of it's ever really in their control, and it's the first episode, I think, that is genuinely quite sad to watch from start to finish. I think the dramatic writing gets so much better in this episode. There are a little bit there are there is a key moment in this episode towards the end where I think that the weaknesses of the first season are exposed clear as day. I think there's a moment, it's basically the bit where they use their one F word of the season, where Herb Kazaz tells BoJack to get the fuck out of his house. And I think in a later season episode, BoJack would leave the house. He would come out to Diane, and he would go, "He's just told me to fuck off. We should probably just get out of here. It's fine." And I tried my best, but he's not listening. And you would just kind of go home, feel a bit sorry for BoJack, but know that he was in the wrong, that kind of thing. Whereas because it's season one, and because it still thinks that it tries to be a sitcom, BoJack walks back into the room and says, "The gay thing and the rectal cancer thing aren't linked, are they?"
It's
And it's
just a
like,
bit, it's a bit classless. It's a bit lame.
yeah,
Just a big
it's,
lame.
I don't know, it's the kind of joke that the show should be above. And then there's the fight scene and stuff, but it's all in the middle of that really great line where Herb Kazaz says, like, to BoJack, "You think that you're the good guy, like, you want to believe that you're the good guy, that's why you've come here to apologize, but you're not. You've only done this to clear your conscience because I'm dying. Like, you've not come out of the goodness of your heart. You've come to kind of satisfy your own guilt and rid yourself of it. And I'm not letting you have that, BoJack. You can get out of my life, please." And it's a great moment. And there are so many scenes between Herb and BoJack in this episode where you're just sitting and I'm looking at the subtitles, and I'm like, this dialogue, this script is great.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate that it's the one sour moment in the episode is a pretty sour moment in the episode. I mean, the Todd plot is just ridiculous. Like, it contributes nothing.
No, and it appears later than I thought it did as well. I mean, I thought it was like a proper B plot. It doesn't even feel like that. It's just you get halfway through the episode, it's there. And I mean, is it what's the plot? Is it supposed to lighten the tone? Maybe, but I don't think you need that.
I think this is what season one is still trying to do.
Yeah.
I think it's when it goes from being a good show to a great show in Hank After Dark, because I think it's the first episode that kind of just commits to this dark atmosphere and sticks with it.
Yeah.
And goes, you know what, we've got a lot of potential writing like this, as they've clearly shown. Let's carry on with this. And I think there's just moments in this episode where I would like to sit on a sad moment or a dark moment or a moment where the dramatic writing is really excelling and really working its magic, and it just doesn't really commit to it. Because I mean, I don't know about you, but like the really early scenes in this episode are just like, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. I love shows that can build a world, show it to you, and then show you some of its past and just have you so excited by future ramifications and consequences. Like, I don't know if you... How much of Game of Thrones have you seen?
All of it, yeah. All of it.
So, like, you know how, like, in season 6, where... spoilers for Game of Thrones, whatever. In season 6 of Game of Thrones, where Bran has the ability to look at flashbacks of, like, Winterfell and the White Walkers being made and Jon Snow... being born and stuff like that, and you're sat there so excited to be like in like a previous incarnation of this world that you've been part of, and it's where it becomes more than a TV show, it becomes more like a camera moving through a world.
Yeah.
And the scenes with Bojack Horseman and Charlotte in the 80s are a great example of this, where these characters who have had, you can feel their impact on the present day in the show just by watching their scenes in the past. And
that's, even if you were watching it and you'd never seen anything past this and you were watching this as your first run through, you can see it. Watching it now, because we've seen every episode and knowing what effect Charlotte has, every time she comes on screen, she depresses me, because I just, that's what could have been, which things like Downer ending show. That which is and every time she comes on screen, it's just he should have got with it. He should have made the move first and everything, like she said, because I think that's what she's pretty much. That's what she's saying. That it's just, it's depressing, and it makes me feel bad for Bojack again. I sympathise far too much with this horse.
Yeah, there's something about Bojack's scenes in the 80s during this season where you're constantly thinking, oh, like you said, what could have been, and the potential that he had. And I think this moment with the network, where Bojack is essentially forced into a corner and Herb is bullied out of the industry.
Yeah.
That's what has such a deep effect. Well, it's what starts how many... It's what starts everything that goes wrong, and I think Herb is like a consequence of that. And yeah, it's, I mean, would you want to leave discussion of the ending to the end?
Yeah, I think it's quite prominent ending, obviously, for future. I do,
because
I think that, I don't know where I was going. It's almost, in a really heartless way, it's refreshing to see a naive like Bojack.
Like, oh yeah, definitely.
He's not got a clue like what he's in for. He doesn't even, you know, he's not even initially aware that horsing around's a show for him. I mean, obviously that's played for laughs, but the naive and the teetotal Bojack, and then look what you've got now, and you look how bad it gets later on, and it's, again, it's just a whole big, like, what could have been, and it's just, it's quite sad, I think.
No, it is. It's a very, very sad episode, and I think it's what makes the dramatic writing so impactful in this episode. Yeah. Especially the relationship between BoJack and Herb that's developed really quickly, but really, really well. Over a course of a couple of short scenes, I think if you just kind of show people together in the past, and you can kind of presume that they've, even if they've not been entirely present in each other's lives, they've still had a huge impact on quite a lot of their thoughts since. Like, quite a lot of BoJack's guilt comes from the fact that he's not been able to speak to Herb, and he hasn't quite brought himself to do it. And that kind of meaningful absence of Herb in BoJack's life has kind of let his guilt fester.
Yeah.
And it's kind of let it, it's basically just like fermented guilt, and it's kind of risen to the top, and it's gone all ugly and disgusting. And the consequence is ultimately, I think, what happens not only between Herb and BoJack, but between Diane and BoJack towards the end of the episode, because BoJack thinks that that's the answer to what's gone wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, in his own confused way, I think BoJack thinks that what happens with Diane at the end of the episode is his way out of feeling bad about what happened between him and Herb, and very quickly he gets the very stark warning that, nope, it ain't. That is not the way out.
It's moving from one problem to another. And I think a lot of people who are in a similar mental state to BoJack, they just move from one bad decision to the next. And it's quite frightening to see that. I mean,
I was watching a YouTube video a little while ago about why BoJack is the way that he is in the show, and it's because he keeps thinking that certain things will fulfill him and make him happy, and then when they happen, they don't.
Yeah.
And it's like in the first season, it's either getting with Diane or finishing his book, and then he thinks that getting the role of Secretariat will make him happy, and it doesn't. And then he thinks that winning an Oscar will make him happy, and then he thinks that connecting with Hollyhock will make him happy, and it's just, it's never worked. And it's with this where he thinks that making up with Herb and trying to find Charlotte will make him happy, but it doesn't go as planned.
No.
And he thinks that trying to kiss Diane would make him happy after that, and it's just this is the beginning of the spiral, essentially, that he ends up falling into, and his relationship with Diane will now never be the same.
No, I mean, it's his birthright, though, isn't it? That's what his mother said, you know? He was born broken. And that is just how some people have it. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you can't help it sometimes. You know, you've got people who are like that. You've got people where everything comes off. Everything comes up Milhouse, or everything ends up BoJack, it seems. You know, there's like one way or another. It's, I mean, and everybody always speculates on how the show's going to end. And it's like, I think with how the arc's going, I think I'd be disappointed if it ended up with a happy ending for him. Because we had that, almost. We had that, I've never had a brother, end of season 4. And
yeah,
I can't see, I don't know, I don't think it'll be a happy ending for him, because it's not how he's wired. It's not, he shouldn't be allowed that anyway, for his actions that happen across all the seasons. But it's just his birthright, it's never going to work out for him, and it's engrossing but upsetting to see.
I want to talk a little bit about the humour in this episode, because I think this is another strong episode. This is another strong outing for the comedy, because you have the generic new wave 80s beep-a-beep-a-beep-a, the decade which it currently is. I'm a very, very big fan of that. And the generic 90s grunge song that they play as well. And all the little references to the 80s, where he leans round and he asks for a new Coke.
After he says something about how TV shows are always chucking in lame gags to show that they're in the 50s or whatever.
and like the hairstyles, the remotes, the giant phone that he's using.
The giant phone and the giant TV remote as well. You've got a giant TV remote as well. But that phone's hilarious. It's like, they were never that big either, were they? So
no, which is probably the best thing about the joke. But yeah.
Crystal, but again, it's just Crystal Pepsi. I don't know what Zima is. Is Zima a water?
I'm not sure. I think it might be, you know, because in an episode of The Simpsons, now that you mention it, the episode where Troy McClure dates Selma.
Yeah.
She lights up a cigarette in a restaurant, and a guy at the next table says, excuse me, I ordered a Zima, not emphysema.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking that that might be what that is.
I'll have a look. I bet it's some kind of weird water, like smart water, which I drink. It doesn't work. Zima. Oh, no, it's alcoholic.
Ah, okay.
It's it was introduced in the 90s as an alternative to beer, and it's a lightly carbonated alcoholic beverage distributed by the Coors Brewing Company.
Oh, of course.
It sounds horrible. It looks like lemonade.
That doesn't sound appealing to me.
No.
Ugh. Hey, do you know what else doesn't sound appealing to me? The fact that Alison Brie very obviously voices the two side characters that rob Todd in the car.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's a marker of the show's budget in the first season.
But I mean, it's like if they did it now, they could get a few people who are kind of like Alison Brie. Like,
yeah, they could get anybody.
Like Britt Baron. Get Britt Baron more work. I'd give her all the work. She's my favourite. But, yeah, I don't even know. Are they meant to be Spring Breakers kind of thing?
I was thinking Spring Breakers / Pussy
Riot.
Yeah,
I wrote that, and it's like,
yeah.
I just think like every time that they're in a scene, they have kind of like dancey music playing off at the end. So I think it's meant to be Spring Breakers.
Yeah, and it was, this episode came out about a year after Spring Breakers, I imagine it was written while Spring Breakers was out.
Yeah, I never got that.
Just kind of smacks of a B-plot that's like, okay, we have the BoJack and Herb stuff that takes up about 17 minutes of the episode. What can we do with the remaining 6 minutes?
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, lame. Let's have Todd carjacked while he tries to do a 3-point turn.
more like a 300-point turn.
Yeah. I don't know. Although there's then the moment in it. I mean, there's the moment at the beginning and with the animal that he nearly runs over at the zebra crossing that calls him an arsehole. And then there's the moment at the end where Princess Carolyn calls him and you realise that the whole thing has been a two-parter.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting place to put a two-parter in a season of TV, I think.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting way to do it. And I tell you what, you know, for a first cliffhanger ending, I don't think you're going to get a better one.
No, I mean, it's, that's probably why I'm thinking that they work so, like, well as a standalone. I mean, you'd obviously have to know a bit about the show and a bit about the characters, but you could show them maybe episode 2 and then show them this and then they're away. Because these two episodes just obviously ramp up the quality in both comedic and dramatic ways, but yeah, it just all works like so well. Everything about this episode, the decade appropriate gags with the haircuts and the old aging and like watching Princess Carolyn grow from being just a secretary kind of thing with a, well, it was PA in it, with a Rachel haircut to who she is now. And just, it's a step up, and I can't remember I don't know what's on next week's agenda, but
I think the season 1 episode 9 is called Horse Majeure, and season 1 episode 10 is One Trick Pony. Season 1 episode 10 is One Trick Pony. So, just before we wrap up about this episode, there's a couple of quotes I really like. There's the I'm not going to give you closure one, which obviously we've talked about previously, where Bojack's constantly after closure and Herb just says, nope, not going to give it to you.
Yeah.
And the other one is that really nice, probably my favourite line of the whole episode, actually, where Herb, I think he turns to Diane and says, what string of events have placed you in Bojack's orbit? And it's one of those things where it's really revealing that once you're in Bojack's orbit, that there is no escaping it. You will just get sucked in a spiraling motion.
Yeah.
And you're basically done for as soon as you come into contact with him.
Yeah, yeah. So if you enter his orbit, then you spat out a lot worse a person, which you can see happens like with everybody, which is why Todd's almost exactly the same, because he distances himself. What I don't get is,
yeah,
it just, like, from the cut from the 80s to the 90s, Horsing Around begins. Where did Herb and Bojack, was there an event that made them a lot more cold towards each other, or is it just Bojack's ego getting in the way?
I think it was just the fact that, Bojack's ego, but also the fact that Bojack didn't really back Herb when the network came for him.
Yeah.
Because he gets arrested. And Bojack stays quiet.
Yeah.
And, I think it's that.
Oh, that's when he gets called Perv Kazaz, isn't it?
Perv Kazaz,
But they never went back for the high five at the observatory, either.
No. I mean, well, I think that's kind of the point, isn't it? They can't, yeah.
I mean, go on.
But, I'm ready to grade.
Yeah. Go on, you go first.
I'm going 8.0, just... solid 8. I think the stuff with Herb and Bojack is generally really good. The stuff with Todd, less so.
Yeah, there's no need for that Todd bit. I mean, you could have probably put something in there with, I don't know. It's there to lighten the tone, because it's just a depressant all the way through. But you could have done something. I don't know what Mr. Peanut Butter's doing. I'll say 8.0, decent 8, maybe.
Sweet.
I think the ending would knock it up a bit as well. So maybe another 8.25, because the ending where he does try and kiss Diane, and it's just awkward, and there's something about the shot at the end and the initial. It sounds like the end credits are going to come.
Oh, the...
Again and
bling.
Again. Yeah, and it does about 3 times.
Bling. Yeah. No, I really liked that touch.
And...
really.
It's just a real good kick on in quality that the show's needed, but there's no getting off now. It's, like we've said before, time and time again, this is where it gets good.
We've been sucked into Bojack's orbit.
Yeah. Maybe that's why we're so depressed. I don't know.
So next week, we have Horse Majeure, and it's the 9th episode of Season 1 of Netflix original series Bojack Horseman. Horse Majeure, along with the rest of Season 1, premiered on August 22nd, 2014. And the synopsis is, a love-struck Bojack tries to sabotage a wedding, Todd accepts a surprising new professional role, and... Season 1, Episode 10, which is One Trick Pony, which the Bojack Horseman Wikia page has a nice shot of Mr. Peanut Butter and Bojack wearing the same clothes. One Trick Pony is the 10th episode of Season 1 of Bojack Horseman, and that also premiered on August 22nd, 2014. Bojack shoots a movie in Mr. Peanut Butter's house. Diane finishes her book.
I don't remember much about that at all. Is Horse Majeure the one with the lesbian wedding?
I think so. In the bathroom. No, that might be season 3.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the bit where Bojack and Emily sleep together.
Yeah. Oh, what a dick.
Yeah, we'll come to that one. I think Horse Majeure is the one where we're introduced to Vincent Adultman. For the first time.
Yeah. That depends on your opinions on him, I guess. I don't remember much about him. I know, obviously, I'm on Reddit. I see people talking about him. But
He's down at the job factory.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, so this has been another episode of React Says Hollywoo. You can find us on iTunes now. So, that's it. I have been a Rob Wilson type.
I've been a Samuel Cook type.
And we'll see you again next time.
Next time.